Hey guys, Podcast Matt here. Just letting you know that the following podcast was recorded by Jordan and Ali on their recent trip to Pakistan, and the audio quality on it isn't great. I've done my very best to sort of clean it up as best I can, but it's still pretty rough around the edges. There should be one more episode from Pakistan after this, and then in the new year, the boys will all be back. So enjoy your holidays, have some time off, and have a good one.
A live infield report from the downtrodden part of Pakistan.
Man. God help this country.
Why? What an advertisement. India's got incredible India. Pakistan's got God help this country.
Come visit today.
Why are you Whitlam just after getting dismissed? Such pessimism.
Well, do you have optimism for this country?
No, I never had it, but I thought you did.
Why do you think I would have? I didn't know anything about this country. Then I walked around and I thought, why is there three guys vying for carrying my luggage? How is there that many people here? You don't need three guys to carry one bag.
You don't even
need one guy to carry one bag. It's just... We were talking to the Minister for Investment of Pakistan, and we were saying this at the end. He had this huge whiteboard of economic equations behind him and all of these policies that he wanted to implement. You know what all those policies should have led to? A circle in the centre that just said, there is too many people in Pakistan.
Look, there are too many people in Pakistan. And the other problem is not only... There's too many people in China too, but they skilled... And that makes a huge difference. Most of these motherfuckers are running to get your suitcase because that is the only thing they can do.
I don't know. They can sell tissues.
Yeah, that's also an and they are selling tissues.
It takes a bit of skill. You know what I realize? Biggies here are very skilled. They know how they do it.
But what they're not smart at is making sure that they're selling something that someone will actually use.
Ali, fill in our audio family with your adventures. For the love of God, tell them what happened. Oh. This is, I gotta say, top three most hilarious moments of my life.
So we just had some dinner at a restaurant, and then we came outside, and just like usual, just get swarmed by beggars. There's two kids. One of the kids was a comedian who kept saying, I am very poor. I come from poor family. Give me 50 rupees.
But he didn't actually want the 50 rupees. Yeah. He just wanted to show us that he knew some English.
So that's the only English that he knew. So initially...
And that's the funny part. He's poor.
But someone probably taught him that so that they could... that he could ask money from foreigners or I don't know, whoever. Because I don't even know if there are any foreigners over here except for you. So... Who knows who that is for? But that is the only thing that man knew. So initially he asked us, and then we started laughing. We were talking to him about it, and then I was talking to him in like the local language, and I was just saying, "What are you up to?" And then he was saying, "Oh, actually, I don't care about money. Can I just say some English for the camera?" We're like, "Okay, fine, go for it." And he's like, "I am very poor. I come from a very poor family. Can you give me 50 rupees?" And I was like, wait, what's going on over here? Do you want 50 rupees? Like, oh, no. That is the only English I know. Sorry. I'm trying to impress you, but this is all I have. But anyway. Wait,
it gets better. That was just the appetizer.
Yeah. So that wasn't even the funny guy. The funny man was this. Dude, what did he look like? Can you give it like a character description of this man? And then I'll tell what the story is. Because he looked hilarious too, besides the fact that his act was hilarious.
You know what I think the best description of him is? Remember when I got in trouble for defiling the extremely important god to Hindus, Hanuman?
Yeah. Hanuman, yeah.
He looks like that monkey god if someone shaved him.
Fuck, that is true, actually. He did look like that. And also, slightly fat.
Yeah, no, fatter Hanuman. Hanuman out of shape.
Yeah.
Hanuman, well, stop going to the gym. No longer Hercules. More like Mike Tyson is later days. Just got a bit of the gut getting into vaping.
So he comes to me, and he's just standing beside me, and he's like, So now we're getting swarmed by like a few of these, right? So I'm just kind of getting a little annoyed because there's just so many of them and we're waiting for our Uber. So then this guy comes right next to me and he like points an egg at me and he's like, "You want egg? You want egg?" And I didn't like initially pay attention because I was dealing with the other beggars around. So then he's like, he just kept like elbowing me. He's like, "Hey, you want egg? You want egg? Boiled egg. Boiled egg." And then I just look at it and I was like, why would I want an egg in this situation? This is just such a bizarre product that you're selling. There is no way anyone randomly walking on the street will take a boiled egg for you. You've got no plates. You've got no condiments. You just have a freaking egg in your hand. I don't even know if it's boiled or not. You claim it's boiled. And then his response was that, just asking. And then he eventually goes away. And now I'm like, I'm laughing a little bit, right? So Jordan's girlfriend too is asking me what is going on. So I tell her the story that he's asking me if I wanted an egg. And when I was like, why would I want an egg in this situation? His response was, I'm just asking. So while I'm telling her this, even though the egg guy had gone away, I don't know this because he's behind me. He slowly sneaks up again and he comes right next to me and two just points out just saying like he's behind you. And I look back and he's like, "You want egg?"
Well, just checking just in case you changed your mind.
Yeah, just in case I changed my mind. Because he was like, he probably thought that we were talking about him. She's like, "Oh, maybe they reconsidered and they want egg."
And we have him on footage, just him walking behind that lady, shaking the egg. Last chance.
And he has one egg. He has no. He just has one egg that he's selling, and no one's buying it. But he still is not realizing that maybe I should change the goddamn product that I'm selling over here.
You know, I don't change my mind. The beggars here are not skilled
at all. Oh, God.
This is so amazing. It would have been better if he offered nothing.
Yeah.
If he just asked for money, he would have had an infinitely better chance of getting money. He found a worse way to beg.
He really, really needs to reconsider some of his strategies. Maybe he needs to meet up with that minister of investment and maybe he can tell him about some of them equations. Egg equals no money. No egg equals maybe.
I don't understand what his thought process was. Do you think that has ever worked? You think any rich tourist has ever walked out of a restaurant district and said, "Oh yeah, you know what I'm really angering right now? A boiled egg out of the hands of a beggar who, no offense, is extremely dirty." That has the same pricing as Radiohead had when they released their album and they just said, "Pay what you want for it." There's so many things wrong with his equation.
I wonder if he actually thinks he's going to sell that egg, or if he is he just found an egg and he was like, "Well, this is a good excuse." I don't know what it is, but he kept saying it was boiled, so he must have put some effort into it to boil it, or maybe he just gave it to him when you open it, like you try to peel it, and just a raw egg, and you're like, "I've been conned." And what a slight con that is as well. If I am getting conned in this country, I would rather it be me thinking that this egg is boiled and it wasn't boiled. Oh, yeah.
So, what I'm saying is, look, come to Pakistan for the experience. Stay for the laughs.
Stay for the lols.
That should be their slogan. For the lols.
For
Pakistan, a country of lols.
Yeah, because Pakistan really hasn't figured out what their slogan is. Have you seen how like it changes everywhere? Like, like Queensland would have the Sunshine State.
And that's just universally understood. That's what we're going with. No, we've sponsored babies about it.
I don't even remember their slogans because there's just been so many. Pakistan, the green country, which is basically false. It's such a false.
It's so brown here.
There's a few green spots, but to say green country, that's a bit of a stretch.
It is less of a lie than Greenland claiming that they're green. And that is saying a lot. Yeah. I've seen so little amount of green since I've been here. Even the trees look this dejected brown.
Yeah, they've just never... You know what it is? It just doesn't rain here that often, so they don't get washed.
Right. Yeah, that says a lot of what you need to know, that all trees here have a nice, healthy layer of brown smog that has just rested on them at all times.
And just using...
Like a sugar-dusted apple.
And using water for to wash them trees is not an option because what we've recently discovered after speaking to my uncle, who was a public servant and as dean at one of the universities over here, we did an interview with him, and you'll get to, like, hear more about it.
Which is very interesting. Well, let's put it this way. Half of it is very interesting.
Like, every university dean, he just went on and on. She's like, well, in 1892, when this country wasn't formed, your date predates the formation of this country for 300 years.
We asked you about Pakistan.
Yeah, we asked you about Pakistan, and you... And he was a smart man, but he just was basically just... Slavoj Žižek on steroids, because...
No, come on. Be more generous to him than that. He is Pakistani Noam Chomsky.
Yeah, he is.
Or as we have colourfully nicknamed him, Noam Paki.
Yeah, and that is going to be his introduction. We usually start off all of the interviews by saying, look, we're going to skip the introductions here. We're going to put that in as a voiceover eventually for the videos. But... our main purpose is that we're going to introduce them the way we want to introduce them. And my uncle has the title Paki Chomsky. Anyways, the point was that he dropped this bombshell while we were speaking to him that, like, Jordan and I just looked at with, like, utter awe. He's like, oh, yeah, according to, like, one estimate, that fresh water in this country is going to run out in 6 years.
And it was as dumbfounding as the Paki guy holding the egg, offering the egg, and then his response just being, I was just asking you about the egg. His response to that was us looking just as shocked as the guy handing us the egg, and he replied, it's just one estimate.
Yeah.
So look, he might be wrong. Maybe it's 7 years. Maybe it's 10.
The point is that it is fucking crazy.
Yeah, it's really, really scary when you come here. Because I don't think that there's a moment of privacy as soon as you enter Pakistan. I would not be surprised if we opened up that sock cupboard that we're currently staring at in Ali's motel room and there's just a Pakistani man that hands out the sock saying, fresh up, show.
You know what it is? I'll tie both of these two things together. The fact that, like, water's going to run out in 6 years and there's a man hiding in the closet with, like, a little sock and saying, would you like it? And I wouldn't be surprised if he was. He's absolutely right. And they both have the same reason. It's the goddamn Himalayas, man. There was just too much water in this area for a very long-ass amount of time. And that just... the earliest civilization recorded... actually, the second earliest civilization ever recorded is about 2 hours away from where we are right now. It's a tributary... it's the Indus Valley Civilization. And it's based on, like, the tributaries of River Indus. And there was the first civilization... in history, because this was such a water-rich country. And not only was it water-rich, what happens often over here is that, actually, which is now just turbocharged with climate change, but every year there's a certain amount of flooding. It's always happened, and it's really good, because what happens is it floods, and then eventually the water goes back into the river, but it leaves these really rich minerals, which are amazing for fertility of the soil. So this area just, like, ballooned up over the last thousands of years, with now the Himalayas providing water for about 50% of the entire world's population. So you've got China, you've got India, That in itself is most of the world's population. But then on top of that, you've got...
India's most of the world's population. Then but then double that up with the second biggest country on Earth. And let's just put this in perspective. Not a distant second either.
Yeah, not a distant second either by any means. And then you've got Pakistan, which is probably the fifth or sixth most populous country in the world.
No, yeah, it didn't even get the bronze. Pathetic.
Yeah, pathetic. But, like, compared to India, it is just tiny. So, it's about 200 million people. But the thing is, India is about 1.2 billion people. But still, Pakistan is, I think, fifth or sixth most populous country.
Which is why I'm terrified of walking into India, because I can't imagine there being any more human beings than there are in Pakistan.
Well, if you think there's a lot of people over here, wait till you go to India.
Exactly. I can't think I can do it. If I go there, it'll be like that Monty Python sketch where they just keep feeding that fat guy until they give him one mint and then his stomach explodes. I'm going to be that mint.
It would be. And then you've got Bangladesh, which is, again, maybe somewhere in the top seven of the most populous countries in the world. And they're all
And look, Bangladesh is tiny, but it's still extremely overpopulated. Bangladesh should just change its name to Can of Sardines.
And again, the reason why it's such a small place but such a big population is because it's so water rich. But the problem now is with climate change is that, well, the water is decreasing.
Ain't no water.
And because these countries aren't first world developed countries, they aren't able to store
water.
Which
may I just say? Hashtag sucked in.
Why?
I don't know. I just feel really good about coming from a developed country after I've been in a developing nation. I always thought that there's heaps of problems in Australia and you're always complaining about them. But then you just see, a man that you know has a master's in education in Pakistan just at, like, the Greyhound bus depot just being like, ticket for you, sir.
Yeah.
Whoa, dude.
It is. It's pretty bad. And you know what's...
But sorry, yeah, keep going. Sorry.
No, but that was pretty much it. And then you can see the effect. So we were in this valley in the north, in the mountains of Pakistan, known as Swat Valley. This was, it's famous for being overrun by the Taliban. And we've discussed this on, like, the videos. You'll probably get to hear about it. But the other aspect that we haven't discussed in the videos, and I think is, like, a good pot thing, the effects of climate change over there. So the local population doesn't really understand why it's happening, but every year there's these massive floods that would just ruin thousands of houses now. And they credit it to, because I was asking like a driver, why do you think this is happening? Because he was saying, well, you know, there used to be snow over here and when I was a kid, and now there isn't any snow over here. And I was like, why do you think this is happening? He's like, oh, because of deforestation. We're just cutting down trees. And he is right, but it's also like a global climatic shift, which he wasn't aware of.
He didn't know about climate change?
No, he didn't know about climate change. He,
whoa.
So, but you know what is also like actually kind of interesting? Like, I was just like sort of observing over there. So what would happen is that people, the population over there would cut down all of these trees and set up like these small villages, which by the way is like one of the most peaceful sort of lives that you can lead. It's actually mad, but like they're cutting up trees.
Even when I say, even when Ali is saying this small town, just imagine somewhere that's the size of Brisbane.
Yeah, they're big. Yeah, there's a lot of people in these towns. But they would just clean out this forest area, which sucks. But then what would happen is that these, now with climate change and shit, these floods would just completely destroy their house. And now there aren't any houses over there. So these guys take it from nature, and then nature finds a way to take it back.
And Ali's response to this really poor Pakistani dude going, just so many people I know, their houses lost. And he's going, it's not yours, man. That's nature's property. Do what it wants. I've never heard Ali say anything that hippie before. I don't know what happened. Where did that come from? Because you are the most red... just your classic person that should just be on BBC at 3 a.m. in the morning talking about the problem with Pakistan is the global shift in trade tariffs have impacted us by 1.5%. And then all of a sudden he busts out this, you don't own the river, man.
I don't know, man, because I was just thinking, like, this, because Swat Valley was actually really nice, and to be fair, it was really nice. Like, I like that place.
Look, it was as nice as somewhere that a rubbish tip can look like.
That's a bit harsh.
It is a bit harsh, but it's not too harsh. There's a lot of trash here.
Yeah, there is a lot of trash here, which, by the way, we talked to the mayor of Karachi for about maybe 20 minutes why there's so much trash.
Which I was very impressed with. He seems like a really good man with honest intentions and convictions.
Yeah.
I did like him a lot. And I also like the fact that his eyes reminded me of Paul Keating's and Margaret Thatcher's. He had that real leader glare. And I was just thinking the whole time, why didn't you even try for president or premier or something? Why do you...
Dude, he is. Well, he used to be the mayor. Now he's going for the premier position.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I stand corrected. Fair enough.
Yeah, because he formed his own party. Anyway, you'll, like, find out more about it when we, like, release the videos on it. But yeah, he was charismatic. But what do you mean by, like, the leader eyes? Like, what's the difference? I don't know what you're talking about.
If you ever observe Paul Keating or Margaret Thatcher when they're on one of their baller speeches in Parliament, there's an intensity to what they're saying. There's a total conviction in what they believe. And you see it over and over with those standout leaders across the globe. They have this, there's like a purpose to their existence that they completely believe in, you know? And like that guy had that look in his eyes. There wasn't any of that shifting around of trying to think, oh, okay, if I say this, will I piss off this voting base? Or, you know, if I say that, then my donor's not going to give me money in the next election. There was just this thing of like, no, this is what I believe to my core.
Yeah, he did seem really focused. And I'll say one thing. We've still got to meet one more guy. But he was perhaps the only one that we've met so far that actually had that charismatic leadership quality. So we ended up meeting the Minister for Investment, who was a very intelligent man, but he was what is known as a technocrat. Someone with brains, but not necessarily a lot of political acumen. This guy just seemed like a man of the people.
Yeah, it seemed like that was the difference.
Whereas the
technocrat was smarter.
Yeah, the technocrat was definitely smarter.
And not to take it away from him as well, he was a very impressive man in his own right.
Yeah, he was. But this guy definitely, yeah, he held an impact on whoever. I think whoever was like hanging out with him, just everyone was calling him Mr. Chairman.
Were they?
Which was a little freaky.
As if Chairman isn't respectful enough.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. And like even like my dad's friend who was supposed to be his friend and who he's the one who sort of organized the interview, even he was saying Mr. Chairman, and I was like, God damn, man, this is like a Mao type character over here.
Well, that and also the fact that as soon as you walked into his building, there was a picture of him in, I don't know, 1A4, this gigantic poster of him with that classic fingers pointed out and cheesy 80s smile that you see on The Breakfast Club.
Yeah, that was...
You know what? That book, I keep wavering in and out of that book that you read that was called Pakistan, A Hard Land.
Yeah.
That is also correct, but I think that there should also be a second edition made that also says Pakistan, A Funny Land.
It is a funny thing. Man, okay. All right, so look, we've mentioned some of the funny and like shit aspects of the country. What aspects of this country do you think genuinely were mad?
Look, I did really like SWAT as soon as I looked up. When I looked down, it was really scary. But SWAT was great. The other thing that I really like about this country is that there seems to be a code of honour amongst Pakistani people that I don't think you witness in the West or India. They actually seem to hold themselves in a regard that I think, and I could just be guessing from this, I think it's the fact that they're Muzis. And obviously, if Mislav Belobrazhik was here, this would turn into a three-hour podcast just for that one phrase. But I legitimately think that Islamic societies have this code of conduct and honour that is embedded into them culturally. And like, you know, okay, yes, they try and rip you off, but they try and do it in this way that's like not, it's not like, there's like respect involved.
Yeah, they're not, you know, seeing you ripping you off. They're like, you know how like, if you go to Thailand or something, and you go on the jet ski, and they'll eventually like just try to rip you off by saying, you weren't driving this right. You are mental. You are not a right man. You were driving this wrong, and now you give me extra money. That's their version of rip off. Whereas like people will try to rip you off like, sure, you are the greatest member of this society, and I will tell you that you actually owe me 2,000 rupees instead of 1,000 rupees. And I would say, no, why? And he'd be like, look, normally I would not take any money from you, but currently I feel I need some money, so 2,000 rupees. He is ripping you off, but he is doing it in such a weird way where he's giving you respect at the same time.
And on top of that, if you ever say to a Thai person or an Indian person, these kind of other cultures that do the whole like grifting shit, when you go to these countries, they seem to have this thing of just like, as soon as you attack them and say, you're just trying to rip me off, they just go like, how dare you question my integrity, sir? I am a very honest man. But like, dude, it's so sick that in Pakistan, that every time they're just like, yeah, man, I am ripping you off, man. It's like, it's pretty shameful, but come on.
Yeah, but come on.
There's something, I don't know, I think that there is something more honest about this country. And I like the fact that also, as they were pointing out, look, this is a country that at one point was sort of controlled by the Taliban.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it was just as if the Taliban controlled Queensland. And, oh, wait, that happened under Campbell Newman. But, you know, like, it pretty much, that's the kind of makeup of this country. But even though that's the case, can't remember.
The Taliban only control like certain parts of the country. We just ended up going to some of the parts that were previously controlled by the Taliban.
Oh, sorry, no, that's what I was saying. It was nothing to do with that. It's just like, it's a safe country.
Well, when yeah, that's walk around the other straits thing, yeah.
Here, it, you don't feel, it's basically just like walking along in Korea. It's the same feeling.
Yeah, so that's actually, you might have a lot of misconceptions. Well, you might, a lot of your misconceptions might actually be true. There's a lot of poverty, there's beggars, you know, all of that shit. It is dirty. But it is, yeah, I've been hanging out with a bunch of foreigners going to, like, actually places that are quite fucked. But I've never felt threatened. People stare, but it's not like, I'm going to kill you stare. It's more like, what the fuck are you doing here kind of stare. And everyone stares. It's crazy. And also, the other thing is, they don't just stare at, like, if they see a white person or if they see some other ethnicity. They'll stare. Everyone stares at everyone else. Even if you're Pakistani, they'll just stare. And they, but the only difference that I noticed was that in Swat or, like, in the sort of country areas, when they stare, I would always, like, look back and give them a smile. And that stare would immediately break, and they would give me the warmest smile I've ever seen. They would wave. Like, I just feel really comfortable. But in the cities, when someone's staring at you and you just look back and you give them a smile, they don't give a shit. They just keep staring deadpan at you as if, like, nothing's happened. And that freaks me out. And I'm like, what? I was like, I just... Yeah, that's a little weird.
I really don't understand that part of the culture. And I don't understand that you could just be staring at them for ages and there won't even be an uncomfortable shoulder shrug of, what's going on here?
Yeah.
Everyone seems to understand that that's just what goes on.
Yeah, everyone does. And even when you, like, stop at a traffic light, every car that is over there is going to look around to see who is in every other car. That just does not happen in Australia. My uncle, Paki Noam, actually had a theory to it. I don't know how true that theory was, but he was saying that, well, we didn't even mention anything about this. He was just saying, like, have you noticed how everyone in this country is extremely inquisitive? They're constantly looking at you. That does not happen in Australia or any other place. And his theory to that was, because he's Paki Chomsky and he's pessimistic as fuck, he's saying it's because of opportunity. What was his thing? It was like a...
He was saying that it was because... I don't think anybody else in Pakistan could possibly have this theory about it. because it came from a bureaucrat in Pakistan, rare enough, but even more double snowflake, an honest bureaucrat. And he was saying that it was because bureaucrats, when they first made this country, they kept it as a technocracy, I guess, for 20 years. And in that time, the bureaucratic elements of this country fleeced the country for everything it was worth, giving themselves better houses, better jobs, resources. And as a result of this inbuilt traditional corruption that started from the beginning, everybody in Pakistan is constantly looking over to other people to see what they're doing and how they can benefit from it.
Damn. It's pretty hardcore.
Do you think that that's a theory that... Dude, maybe they just like staring. I mean, old guys on park benches in Australia love staring.
Yeah, but they're well, actually, you know what
I think? I think it is just, if you have fuck all to do, what else can you do?
What else can you do? But you know what the other thing is? Yeah, that's true. Look, if you and that is 100% correct, and that's most of it. However, even the ones that are doing something, they still stare as well. And I think maybe, look, it's not as cynical as like they're just trying to rip you off. Because, but what's happening is when you're, you know, dogs are doing the same thing over here, like stray dogs. What's happening is when you're living in a rough society, you're constantly on guard. It's not because people are getting killed, and like we said, it didn't feel unsafe as such, but there's always that fear of something going wrong at any point in time. So when we're in Swat Valley, we're a bunch of foreigners just going around these places. They know pretty much everyone around them, but they don't know. So I think it's a stare of like, do I need to be on guard? What the fuck is happening over here? I need to know everything that is happening over here so I can plan my next strategy. And I think that is inbuilt in society. Everyone over here is extremely concerned with what the other person is doing because that informs how they would behave. Same thing happens in driving. Everyone over here, look, in Australia when you're driving, right, what you do is, you know, when you're at a roundabout, you make sure you give the person on your right the way, the right of way, so that they can go away. There's rules, so you don't need to look at everything all the time. You know that certain rules are going to be followed. And in case, if they're not followed, it's that motherfucker's fault, and he's going to pay for my car damages, right? There's a sense of security. Over here, every driver is constantly judging what the other guy is going to do. Because he's not trusting that guy is going to follow rules. So, in a way, he is kind of like analytically staring at everyone else. And I think that's just part of society over here now.
Okay. Well, that's another element of Pakistan that doesn't give me much hope for this country, that all of their time that they could be processing into using their analytical skills to read, they have to process just like stopping at a red light.
Yeah, and making sure that what's happening around them is safe enough for it to be. You and said dogs something. Are the same. Dogs, if you see like dogs are staring as well all the time.
Yeah.
It's because they're preempting what this motherfucker is going to do.
You can tell the dogs are really smart here. And actually your friend was saying that this German dude he saw was just rounding up dogs and putting them into his van. And he thought, is he going to eat these dogs? And so he walked over and talked to him. And then he said, no, we take them back to Germany and we sell them as hunting dogs. Because they're extremely street smart and, like, very keen and have, like, a great sense of smell. And because they know what starvation's like, they're hungry for that rabbit. And they weren't dead. But also, the thing that you said after we met your uncle that has been haunting me ever since is that, because I was just saying to his uncle, who is looking out for the future of Pakistan? Is there anybody that is thinking about how to improve this country? And his opinion was no. Nobody, from politicians to bureaucrats to the military to landowners to the US, every power base in the country is looking for how to defend what they have so they don't end up on the street like the vast majority of the rest of Pakistan. And you said after that, that everyone in this country is in survival mode. Now, that is a scary thought, that even the people that control the country, the people in the military, for instance, they are not thinking about how to advance the country. They are thinking purely about how they get through to the next day.
Look, okay, so I'll just elaborate on that. It's not that they don't like the country or they're not thinking of its advancement. You speak to them and after talking to them, you realize that they actually have good intentions. But there's a few problems. The problems are that for advancement of society, you need a certain amount of consensus in the country. This consensus is most easily achieved if your country is homogenous like Australia or England. It would not be easy if your country...
What do you mean homogenous?
Homogenous, like...
There's ethnically. A lot of Chinese people in Australia now.
Yeah, well, true, and that could complicate things. Actually, that is...
And it has complicated things. Fucking Gladys Liu.
And
it has. It's bloody compromised. Dude, maybe Miss Love was right.
Yeah. No, but he isn't amazing. Wrong.
Yeah, he's not wrong. Yeah, he's not wrong, but on top of that, Ali, maybe we're wrong.
No, no, look, okay, I've thought about
stay
this.
Stay here, Ali. Get the fuck out of my country.
Please don't leave me here, man. No, that's I suck you. Your dick, man. Please let me go, man.
No idea. Look, I can't wait to get back to Australia, but Ali, he is counting down the seconds.
Yeah.
He doesn't like living here.
Look, it's kind of all right being back here for a couple of weeks and shit, but, like, not more than that. And it was...
You know what? There's another thing that you come up to Ali, and it's just... Ali looks perpetually sad anyway, but there's an extra layer of sadness that even alerts me as one of his closest friends when I see him. And so I walk up to him and I say, what's the matter? And his response every time is, man, this country suck ass, man.
Because there's always some fuckery happening, some bullshit happening that is just... Like, hey, small example, our flight gets delayed, right? Happens everywhere in the world. Not a problem. But usually, you're somehow, like, notified, or there's some sort of way that you can find out that your flight's been delayed. And not by an hour, by 8 hours! So you end up going to the airport, and you're like, no, my flight's at 12. Like, no, your flight's at 7 in the evening. And you're like, I have my ticket here. It's at 12. He's like, well, too bad. I was like, what do you mean too bad? It's like, okay, look, I guess we're just going to go inside the airport and wait. Then he's like, nah, you can't do that. Like, why can't we go inside the airport? It's too early to go inside the airport. So I'm like, what am I supposed to do now? Okay, can we leave our luggage? So then I go to the airline counter and like, hey, can we just like leave our luggage here and we'll just go out? We don't have a hotel anymore. So we're just going to like, I guess, walk about the city. And the guy's like, nah, we can't do that. It's like, why can't you do that? It's like, we have no sort of facility. You're an airline. You deal with luggage every day. How do you not have any place you can store our luggage? And so, like, yeah, it's a hard country, man. It's a hard country. So we just have to, like, carry around our luggage around. So small shit like that, which was
into a cab driver, and then you say, look, how much is it going to cost us to go to this memorial park or whatever it was? And then he just goes, like, 2,000 rupees. It's like, man, I am not in the mood to fucking haggle.
Yeah, exactly.
I do understand it. It wears you down, every little decision. And I think it just must be like a Vietnam flashback for you.
Yeah.
14 years of everything that you've ever asked in your life. Just, hey, can I have some water? 12.50. I know it's not fucking 12.50.
And plus, like, by that time, I think the day this happened was, I was just like, it had been like 7 days of constant, intense sort of. So we had a really busy schedule over here. I sort of crammed in a lot of things. And now we're at the last leg where Jordan's going to leave tomorrow and I'm going to leave in about a week or something. And so now this is like the pod where we're just chilling because we were going to like record the pod. And the other issue with this trip was that most of the people come here for the food. And I don't know if you know this, Jordan can't eat food. He's basically a rabbit.
I'm a herbivore.
He can only eat carrots and cucumbers. And in this country, their version of carrots and cucumber is lamb and beef.
And
yesterday, we were after like our interview with the mayor and shit. My dad's friend was going to take us out for dinner. So he asked me, he's like, what are your friends like? And I was like, oh, man, so they just want something like a vegetable dish. And he was like,
I know the perfect place.
I know the perfect place. Then they come to Jordan and they say, are you okay with lamb tikkas?
Yeah, I know. And then we're just like, oh, yeah, we'll get some vegetables. They're like, okay, we take you to a restaurant with vegetables. You know what I think they think vegetables are? Chicken. And then, like, I just bought heaps of plates of chicken for us.
So if you like meat, then this place is food heaven for you. But if you're like Jordan and you only like carrots, then this is not the country for you. So
it's getting pretty desperate. Even when I'm walking past those brown soaked trees when we're driving past in the cab, I've done this on numerous occasions. And for people at home that did not see that face, I was licking my lips in anticipation, because that is the closest thing that I've come to across here to one of those Woolworths Select instant mixed salad bags. So that's the kind of country that Pakistan is.
Okay. And the favorite place that Jordan had was like one of the hotels that we stayed in was, and because it was my friend's hotel, we just had some extra privileges. So we went to the vegetable market. We bought a fuckload of spinach and we went to the hotel and we said, we want to speak to the chef. And the chef walked out and we handed him a massive green bag of spinach and we're like, cook this shit. and actually that's a testament to like how this place is kind of mad. Like, and he was like, of course, you're like, no problems. And he cooked us a sick spinach curry after that.
That is really, I am not used to, walking outside your your room and you realize that your shoelace is untied and then you go down to it. And then a man in his 40s with that George Costanza hair is just like, no, sir, let me. And he just does it for you. I am not used to that kind of life and I find it really sad. But now that I'm thinking back at Australia, I don't know how I can handle that shit when I go back. I think too many cooks spoiling the prof in terms of service might be better than when you go to like a restaurant in Australia and then you say, can I have some water? And then they look at you like you've just insulted their mum.
Yeah. And you know, like, this is the other thing that you feel over here when you get here. Look, initially, the fact that there's so many people, there's so many servants. Poor people have servants. Like, imagine how poor those servants are.
And rich people import servants from the Philippines.
Yeah, that's like the elite. It's a status symbol to have a Filipino nanny in this country. But yeah, because like there's so many servants and they're always doing shit for you. Initially, when you go, like, even when I like if when I come back, I'm. Like, so if someone's like, I'll get you water, and then they just run away, like, I'd say, no, it's okay, I can get water, and you don't have to tie my shoelaces, and I can wipe my own ass, thank you very much.
and but just like, at that moment, there's some you hear some muffled voice in the bathroom being like, okay, but I'm here if you need me.
But my point is, that attitude has a two-week expiry date. I'm telling you, eventually, you get used to that shit, and then you're like, okay, wipe my ass now, I'm ready. Yeah, you get.
What point do you stop saying in this country, I made a boom boom? As part of the elite, is that just like your expression, the hand shouldn't stop?
Can we explain that?
Otherwise people won't get the gag.
Yeah.
And dude, the hand shouldn't stop is a gag in itself. Gagception. Yeah, so tell us about it.
So the hand, so this happened literally the first night that we came to Pakistan. So we end up coming to the hotel and then there's an army of my friends that I hadn't met in like a decade. So they took us out for dinner. It was like, what, like 10 guys, right? So we go to this like sort of upper middle class, like a kind of not super fancy, but up there in terms of restaurants. So they take us out for dinner, right? So we're having food and then they get like the waiter to come in. And all of them, 10 motherfuckers, just had the same thing to say to the waiter. And Jordan was confused. What is going on over here? They kept saying, the hand shouldn't stop. And remember, and the waiter was like, of course, sir, of course. And then the next one would be like, listen, the hand should not stop. So Jordan's like, what the fuck is up with this hand shouldn't stop shit? And then their point was that when the 10 of us are eating, my hand should not stop in terms of food. If there, so the other thing is like, they wanted hot bread, right? So the bread, the naan, should be fresh, but my hand should not stop. So when I am about to finish it, someone of you motherfuckers needs to run into the kitchen as fast as possible and bring me another one because my hand should not stop. And I was like, and at that point I was just like I felt weird too. So I just was like, dude, let your hand stop for a little second. It's okay. Calm the fuck down. And it was, yeah, and it was just a synchronized thing of like all of them saying, it's a very sort of uncool thing to say at a restaurant for a waiter, just like the hand shouldn't stop, which means like, it is another way of saying like, I need exceptional service. But their barometer for it's service so is just
entitled and obnoxious. Yeah,
it is entitled and obnoxious. In fact, I paid them out, by the way. So like, I sat down with them when we came back to the city, and Jordan went to sleep. But like, my friends were, and also this is the other thing: the hotel room over here allows smoking. So 10 motherfucking friends of mine are constantly smoking joints and cigarettes over here. So I'm just living in this massive cloud all the time.
And on top of that, when you said, maybe we should stop doing that. Maybe we should stop smoking weed, because if we open up the door, there's just going to be this plume of weed smoke that'll enter through the corridors of this hotel like Stephen King's The Fog. And their response was to that, hey, didn't you pay a lot of money for this hotel room? Yeah,
shut the fuck up.
Yeah, hey, you paid a lot of money for this hotel room. You shut the fuck up. So but also, everyone in the hotel, shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Big Rich here has its perks.
It does. It definitely does have its perks. And look, no one said anything about the fact that there was this massive cloud coming out of the door. No one made any complaints. We were loud as fuck the entire night. But what I did do was, like, I told them and I was like, guys, you guys have to stop with this. The hand shouldn't stop stuff, man. This is obnoxious as fuck. And they were like,
well, did you?
Yeah, yeah. I was like, this is pretty obnoxious. So they were like, well, why? First, I had to explain to them why it was obnoxious. They're like, what do you mean? We were like trying to get good service, right? I was like, no. The service shouldn't be that exceptional where, like, your hand shouldn't stop. You can stop your hand for a bit, and that is fine. Like, you know, you get, like, there's courses sometimes. Like,
there's something so fucking annoying about the hand, not just the mouth, the hand.
Yeah, yeah, the hand.
It's something, it's because it's so baby and grabby, just being,
But you know what the other thing about, I appreciate that there is a blessing in disguise for that hand shouldn't stop thing, because, man, see, when you go to, like, dinner in Australia or something, right, you've got, particularly if you're going for, like, a three-course dinner, there's gaps, and then the service takes its time, and that's a whole experience on its own. But, man, we've been hanging out with a lot of bullshit uncles over here that I don't want to have dinner with, and when they say the hand shouldn't stop, I'm, like, happy, because I'm, like, yeah, it's going to get over with quickly. They're going to exhaust themselves with eating too much, and then we're going to get out of here quicker. Oh, so I have, like, nefarious smart means to be, like, okay, I am okay with this hand shouldn't stop because we get to leave early.
So when they say it, you just say to the waiter, just be like, you heard the man, more naan.
Yeah, more naan. Now, put it straight in his mouth. Don't even give it in his hand. Just right in his mouth.
And replace all the chicken with turkey.
Dude, the guy that we met yesterday, my friend, my dad's friend, he was such a next level. He was saying, when Jordan was saying, we'll go anywhere with, like, where there's, you know, some kind of vegetable, just one vegetable dish out of, like, a million.
One!
And he was like, first of all, he was like, what a stupid cunt. And he was like, absolutely no.
Really? Is that what he did? But this he said out of the question.
Well, he didn't say out of the question. He was just saying, of course, but he then took us to a place with no vegetable dish whatsoever. Just, like, just an entire cow was on our table, but
it's so, I don't know, it was just so odd. I don't understand why they have such a fucking, like, why do they have such why do they have such an aversion to being healthy? Like, it's like, look, I understand that some people don't want to be healthy, but it's like they're offended at the idea of not dying before 50.
It's true.
I mean, and after 50.
You know what was weird about this guy? So I don't know if he told you this, but he was telling me, so this is how far off your request for vegetable was from actually happening. He was saying that, I hate vegetables. My wife makes me have vegetables. Dude, he is just a grown child.
Baby.
Everyone here is a grown baby. Overgrown baby. But he was also saying that he thinks that chicken also sucks. He only wants beef and
too
lamb.
Close to vegetable.
He's like, too close to vegetable. He's like, I
when they sit down, it kind of looks like broccoli coming out of the ground.
Yeah, so that was pretty intense. So, needless to say, Jordan's request for vegetable remained unfulfilled. And they were still, like, low-key offended that Jordan wasn't eating like a pig.
So not only do you have to eat heaps of fatty food here, yeah, but you have to eat lots of it. Like,
dude, he called me a poof for not finishing an entire goat yesterday. Did you know? Like,
kidding?
The equivalent of a poof. Like, well, wait, he, like, and I don't mean it in a derogatory way. That's what he called me. I'm trying to explain to you. He was just saying, like, because he bought these, like,
you're homosexual because you didn't eat.
Yeah. That's what he was saying. So. And this guy,
they are babies.
Yeah.
He uses that as an insult for that content. It's like kids in year six.
So this guy, mind you, he is not some like he is a very successful businessman. He is an incredibly rich man, and he is also well connected with the local politicians. And he himself is also a politician, right? So he isn't some like nobody that like just randomly calls people gay for not eating enough meat. So he had ordered like this lamb kebab, right? And I had eaten, by that time I'd eaten as much as I could, honestly. And he was saying, finish this massive kebab, which in itself was a meal. It was a meal. And he was saying, just finish this. And I was like, oh, I am full, sir. Thank you very much, but I'm physically impossible. And he was like, well, you're a fucking Australian poof. I'm like, what is going on over here? I had to, and I was like, oh, and he's like, okay, if you have to finish half of it at least, and then I had to force feed myself half of it, and then he had the other half. Yeah, everyone's just like way too interested in feeding your ass all the time over here, which is mad. And also, by the way, if you do like me, and if you're not like Jordan, where you can only handle like lettuce, you should come to this country. The food is mad if you're into that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But what I will say is that's all well and good, really up for traditional cuisine, but KFC does it better. For some reason, the Colonel just killed it as soon as he came to Pakistan. I don't know what the deal is. Maybe it's because they're the only people on Earth that like deep-fried shit more than he does. So it was a match made in heaven. So it was just 200 million Colonel Sanders intent on how to improve his 11 herbs and spices. But they have. What are you looking at?
I'm just, I already knew
that.
Yeah,
let's just finish on that note, because I think...
But I don't know how long we've recorded. I don't understand Apple. I'm sorry.
Well, we're about to run out of battery anyway. Look, the point is, Pakistan is as funny as it is desperate, and it is a very desperate nation. And so I really recommend that you come here. If you like feeling sad and laughing, and look, pretty much, this is, you know what this country is? This country should be for that symbol in theater of the laughing mask and the sad mask. If that was a person, this is the holiday destination for you. That's my summary.
Well, there you go. So that's a good representation. That's an ad for this country. All right, well, we'll see you next week.
That should be their flag. See you next week.
We'll do another podcast in Pakistan, and then because I'll be here, Miss Love, Jordan and Miss Love are going to record a few in Australia as well. So see you then.
Goodbye. Bye.